Udavar vacha. Udava said. Ata. Thereafter. Te. They, the Yadavas. Tat. By the Brahmanas. Anugyataha. Being permitted. Bhuktva. After partaking. Bitva. Drinking. Cha. And. Varunim. Liquor. Taya. By that. Vibram Shita Jnanaha. Being bereft of knowledge. Duruktahai.
With harsh words.
Marma. The core of the heart. Apaspritchuhu. Touched. Translation. Thereafter, all of them, the descendants of Rishni and Bhoja, being permitted by the Brahmanas, partook of the remnants of prasada and also drank liquor made of rice. By drinking, they all became delirious, and bereft of knowledge, they touched the cores of each other's hearts with harsh words. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. In ceremonies where Brahmanas and Vaishnavas are sumptuously fed, the host partakes of the remnants of foodstuff after the guest has given permission. So the descendants of Rishni and Bhoja formally took permission from the Brahmanas and ate the prepared foodstuff. Kshatriyas are permitted to drink at certain occasions. And so they all drank a kind of light liquor made of rice. By such drinking, they became delirious and bereft of sense, so much so that they forgot their relationship with one another and used harsh words which touched the cores of each other's hearts. Drinking is so harmful that even such a highly cultured family becomes affected by intoxication and forget themselves in a drunken state. The descendants of Rishni and Bhoja were not expected to forget themselves in this way, but by the will of the Supreme, it happened, and thus they became harsh towards one another. So, Uddhava vacha atate tadanugyata bhuktva pitva javarvanim taya vibram shita jnana duruktair mama paspraśahu. So, Om Gana Tivadanda Shah Gananjana Shlakya Chakshur of Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigurve Namaha. So, of course, these are the events preceding the Moksha Leela, or the disappearance pastimes of the Lord and of the Yadu dynasty. And these pastimes are described in greater depth in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the 11th canto describes that the, first of all, Krishna, he decided that when he was leaving the planet, he had to also arrange for the departure of his devotees, because his devotees would cause a great deal of havoc without him being there. That's an interesting point. So Krishna arranged this interesting pastime by which the Yadavas got cursed. And before the Yadavas got cursed, actually Krishna got cursed, which is an interesting story from the Mahabharata. What happened is that we all know in the Mahabharata the Kauravas were completely destroyed and there are very few people left after the Battle of Kurukshetra. So after the Battle of Kurukshetra, the Pandavas and Krishna went to visit Gandhari. And Gandhari, being a very chaste lady, having bound her eyes for her whole life, to be obedient and not better than her husband, had great power. So Gandhari was extremely angry, even though she knew that her sons were quite demoniac. And she was getting ready to curse Yudhisthira. And Krishna prevented her from cursing Yudhisthira. However, she did happen to look under her blindfold at Yudhisthira's feet. And Yudhisthira's feet, which were previously, you know, extremely beautiful, you know, nice toenails, they actually started, the toes started to curl up and become ugly. Just because she looked under her blindfold. And then she was thinking of Krishna, of course she couldn't look at Krishna. And she cursed Krishna. She said, Krishna, you could have stopped the whole thing. She knew that Krishna made some attempts to pacify her sons and to arrange sort of a peace treaty. But still she understood Krishna was the Supreme Personality of God, and she got extremely angry at him, and she cursed Krishna, because you did not stop this. You caused the conflagration that was the cause of the destruction of all my sons and practically the whole dynasty. I curse you, Krishna, to die 36 years from today, and your whole dynasty will actually self-destruct like my dynasty self-destructed. They're going to fight amongst each other and kill each other. So this is one curse that occurred. Of course, Krishna, he accepted this because he understood this was his plan. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, controls everybody. He's in everyone's heart. Ishvara, Sarvabhutanam, Hridesha, Arjuna, Tishtati, Brahmayana, Sarvabhutani, as described in the Gita. He's controlling the wanderings of the living entities, giving the living entities matak smritir gyanam apovanam cha, intelligence, remembrance, forgetfulness, according to their desire. So nothing happens outside of the will of the Lord. So even this curse was Krishna's desire. So later on, 36 years later, there's an interesting pastime that occurred where another curse was there. And this pastime involved the sages who were residing at that time in Pindaraka. There were many sages, Narada Muni and Vasishtha Muni, Vishwamitra Muni, and they were having sort of a sadhu sangha, just like in ISKCON we have this sadhu sangha that's going to go on pretty soon. In the United States, they have, you heard about this? Sadhu sangha, actually 1,600 devotees are going to it. It's in North Carolina, right near where I live in North Carolina, because I'm not there, but because I'm not a sadhu. So it's only for the real sadhus. So so there was a sadhu sangha there, and the boys decided to tease the sages. You know, boys are very playful sometimes. So there was this Shamba, who was actually quite playful, and the other boys. And Shamba sort of like made believe that he was a lady and that he was pregnant. And the other boys went along with the whole act. And they went to the sages and they said to the sages, this young, beautiful girl is pregnant and we want to know whether it's going to be a boy or a girl. In those days, they didn't have ultrasound to detect these things. So the sages, understanding they were being teased and being made fun of, they cursed the Yadu dynasty. They said, well, this girl is going to give birth to an iron club that's going to be the cause of the destruction of the whole dynasty. So a few seconds later, the boys removed the cloth that was covering Shamba, and they saw there was an iron club there. And they brought that iron club and told the story to Ugrasena, who was the king of the Yadu dynasty. And Ugrasena tried to make some material adjustment to get free of the curse. That doesn't work, making a material adjustment. And so he ground up this iron club and threw the bits into the ocean, the little pieces into the ocean. And there was one piece that was actually a little bigger that they couldn't grind up, and that also went in the ocean. And so what happened is the pieces of this iron club came back to the shore, and they grew into these tall canes, very, very tall canes. And this one bigger piece became the arrowhead for this hunter named Jada, who eventually shot Krishna in the left foot, thinking that Krishna's left foot was a deer. Of course, that's very hard to mistake a left foot for a deer. And this Jada actually was the incarnation of Bhrigu Muni, who had previously offended Lord Vishnu by kicking Lord Vishnu in the chest. And of course, this was part of the curse that Lakshmi gave to him. So, but it was all Krishna's plan. So later on, we have the Yadu dynasty. It's being described here, drinking rice wine. and fighting each other and killing each other. And after they killed each other, of course, they didn't kill Krishna. Krishna apparently left. This is an illusory pastime, being shot in the foot by the hunter. And Balaram, he meditated, and his scribe Anantashesh came out of his mouth. And in this way, he left this world. Then when Arjuna was informed about that, Arjuna went to Dwarka and was able to bring the residents of Dwarka out of Dwarka, because as he was proceeding out of Dwarka with the wives of Krishna that were still there and the residents that were still there, there was a flood that covered the city. And to this day, Dwarka is still under the ocean, and many archaeologists and other people have actually discovered this sunken city of Dwarka and other cities under the sea that are thousands and thousands of years old. So as Arjuna was taking the residents of Dwarka away, especially Krishna's wives, there were a bunch of dacoits that attacked and kidnapped many of Krishna's wives. And those dacoits, actually, as described, were expansions of Krishna. That's a whole story of the Moksha Lila. A very, very interesting story. And eventually, Arjuna brought Krishna's great-grandson, Vrajanath, who was the son of Aniruddha, and installed him as the king of the Yadus. And that Vrajanath later on went to Braj, that's Vrindavan, that's why it's called Braj. He went to Braj and he installed many of the original deities that the Goswamis later on discovered, like Govindaji, Madan Mohan. They were installed by Vrajanath, and Vrajanath actually discovered all these different holy places in Vrindavan. And when Vrajanath was in Vrindavan, he had a kirtan, and Krishna and his associates appeared out of the ground, and they were dancing during that kirtan. Very interesting story. So this is all the Moksha Lila. So how this is important for us, which is, you know, application is very important when you're talking about a Bhagavatam verse. So we're talking about Kshatriyas here. Now, the Kshatriyas, incidentally, didn't have to follow the same principles that we have to follow in the Krishna Conscious Movement. In fact, we find, in many cases, they were breaking the same principles, but for them, it's not breaking the principles. They were allowed sometimes to take intoxication, sometimes to gamble, sometimes to go hunting and eat meat, and not illicit sex per se, but if they were met by a lady, and the lady sort of proposed to them, and the lady was not a bad lady, they had to accept the lady as a wife. It's interesting. You know, so they had all these different principles that we follow. Sometimes we find devotees in the Krishna Conscious Movement, they want to become Kshatriyas so they can break the principles. I remember many years ago there was one devotee who was a bodyguard of Srila Prabhupada, and he was telling me, I'm a Kshatriya. And he used to eat a whole, a whole liter full of chickpeas every morning to make himself passionate. And he didn't follow the principles too well. So Prabhupada didn't indicate that we should have these sorts of Kshatriyas. And we see that when the Kshatriyas did do these things, inevitably there were problems. Even though we're allowed to do these things, just like Prabhupada said, there's danger on the royal road. For example, even in the Krishna Conscious Movement, sometimes we have certain situations where people are given a license for sense gratification. I mean, for example, in the household life, right? They're given a driving license, you know, a license for sense gratification, Prabhupada called it. So just like if you're given a license to drive a car, it doesn't mean you're supposed to speed. It means you're supposed to adhere to the rules and regulations. But many times people are given a license for sense gratification and they just think, well, this is an unlimited license. We're on the Autobahn, at least like in Germany. Everybody knows about the Autobahn in Germany? There's no speed limit in the Autobahn. However, in most roads, Jai, Shishi, Gandharvi, Giridhari, on most roads there's a speed limit. So the licenses the devotees get for sense gratification, not only in household life also, we have a license to enjoy our tongue eating prasadam. But Prabhupada said many stalwarts have fallen down in the name of Mahaprasadam. I mean, you know, we have this thing, you know, vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam. You have to control the tongue, belly, genitals, mind, anger, and words. And if one eats too much or eats too little, this can cause a disturbance in one's spiritual life. You know, eat too much, and then it puts pressure on the other senses. So, atyahara, isn't it? Collecting too much, eating too much, over-endeavoring, being ritualistic, or not following the rules and regulations. These are all causes of fall down from devotional service. So even though we all have these licenses, there's a tendency to misuse the license. It's not only in household life. Even a sannyasi, you know, has a license to... I don't know what we have licenses for. Anyway, we have a license to take dakshin. That's a big discussion. That's a big discussion. I guess we should bring this into class since we have the chairman of the GBC here. Give him some ideas how to control the errant sannyasis in our Krishna conscious movement. So the sannyasis, you know, people give sannyasi a donation. But, you know, if the sannyasi accepts the donation, well, let's say the guru, for example. The guru, not only guru dakshin, but the guru has all a license to accept praise. And so we've seen many people fall down. For example, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur talks about the causes of anarthas. Anartha means unwanted things. He gives four causes of anarthas. He says one cause, of course, is sinful activities. Another cause is pious activities, because one becomes enamored with the mode of goodness. Another cause is offenses. But the final, most difficult cause of anarthas to overcome is the byproducts of bhakti, which is really interesting. What does that mean, the byproducts of bhakti? Does it mean spiritual ecstasy is going to cause you to fall down? No, because as you perform devotional service, you actually get some profit adoration distinction, which is can cause you to fall into the mode of passion. Like Lord Chaitanya prays in Adanam Najanam Nasundari in Kavitam Va Jagadisha Kamaya. I'm not interested in wealth, women, prestige, etc. like that. So as one performs devotional service, even, let's say, one takes the position of guru, one can get these things, right? I remember the early days of the movement, after Prabhupada left the movement, there were many young people who were gurus, and all of a sudden they were presented with all this profit adoration distinction. People, you know, 21, 22, 23 years old, and all of a sudden all these young girls, not apsaras, but whatever they were, we're in front of, oh, Gurudev, whatever you say, your wish is my desire. And money and prestige. And then that would inevitably cause, in most cases, it caused some difficulty in their spiritual lives. So one has to be very alert. I mean, not only a position of guru, but any position. Like Prabhupada one time said, very interestingly enough, that if one goes to Lanka, they become Ravana. In other words, if you take a position, there's the tendency, because of the profit adoration distinction you get in that position, to become enamored. For example, in the case of, a guru in the Krishna conscious movement, you get a book written about you every year. Pretty nice, isn't it, Prakash?
I haven't experienced it.
Yeah, we'll have to put you in that. I'll have to write some offerings to you on your birthday. So, yeah, telling you how nice you are. Can you imagine that? I mean, you all think about that. Like, if you're every year there was a book saying you have lotus feet, you're so sweet, can't be beat. You know, your smile is like a heaven. You know, your shakti is just like unlimited. You know, so after a while, that book becomes your favorite reading, and you don't read the Prabhupada's books. The Chaitanya Charitamrita, you read me Charitamrita. You know, the nectar of my pastime. So. Becomes your bedtime reading before you go to sleep, instead of a Krishna book. So this leads to a mode of passion. The point I'm making, it leads to the mode of passion. So really what we're talking about here with the Kshatriyas, the problems, are actually due to the mode of passion. You know, profit, adoration, distinction, which is a subtle sex life. So getting back to the Kshatriyas, we even when they do these things, the four regulated principles, they don't break them, but they're but they're breaking what we would consider the four regulated principles, it causes problems. And I'll give an example. Let's say polygamy, where a kshatriya can accept several wives or women who come to him. We have examples in the case of Dasarath. You know, Dasarath had three wives, and ultimately one of his wives, you know, Kaikeyi, she caused problems. And she was against Lord Ramchandra. Lord Ramchandra had to be sent to the Dandakaranya forest because of her. And then you have Chitraketu, who not only had one, two, three wives, it's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam that Chitraketu had 10 million wives. What's the population of Sweden?
9 million.
10 million?
9 million.
9 million. So more people than the population of Sweden as someone's wife, you know. Because, can you imagine that? I mean, that's Bhagavatam. I mean, don't blame me for that. because he was so much in the mode of passion, not wanting to enjoy so much woman, but he wanted to have a son. You know, that's passion. I gotta have. Unlimited desire. Like it's described in the Bhagavad Gita, that those who are in the mode of passion, they have unlimited desires. They're never satisfied. Those in the mode of ignorance just go to sleep. So you don't worry about them too much. And those in the mode of goodness are satisfied. So 10 million wives, and eventually, by the blessings of Angira Muni, he had one child. But the problem was the 9,999,999 wives that didn't have that child were envious. And they killed the child. The child, of course, was called Harsha Shoka, you know, happiness and distress. And so, you know, he learned his lesson. Don't try to enjoy this material world in the mode of passion. So that's an example of, like, you know, the practically unlimited sex life that the kshatriyas were allowed to have. And then as far as intoxication, we have the story here that's being told. Gambling. We have the story of Yudhisthira Maharaj, who was gambling with Shakuni. And he got cheated, and eventually he got in such a fever. Gambling is a fever. I've seen that. I've been in Las Vegas preaching, not gambling. And watching little old ladies with this, what's called a one-arm bandit. You know what a one-arm bandit is? It's a slot machine. And they just sit there all day long, you know, just putting their coins. And once in a while, they get a little reward. They're thinking they're going to win the jackpot. And so Yudhisthira was thinking like that and got to the point that he was even gambling his brothers after he gambled his kingdom, and even gambled his wife. I mean, Hare Krishna. So it's a fever that a kshatriya gets into when he's gambling. And then then the last one, of course, is hunting and even eating meat. There's stories of how the kshatriyas got in trouble doing that. When Dasarath, of course, was hunting, he excuse me. He killed this young boy who was getting water for his parents, his blind parents. And as a result of that, he got cursed, the parents cursed him, that they left their bodies feeling separation from their son, that he would leave his body in the same way. Excuse me, old age. So, and then you have Pandu, who also had a hunting accident. You know, Pandu killed this the Rishi Kindama as he was having a relationship with his wife. They were in the form of a deer, and he got cursed that if he ever approached his wife, you know, he would die in the same way. And eventually that's what happened. He approached Madri, and he left his body. So you see all these crazy things that occur when the kshatriyas even did these things, even though they were allowed to do these things, this passionate thing. So that this alerts us to the danger of passion. That's the point I'm making right now. So, of course, this passion comes, all the things in this material world come from the spiritual world. So in the spiritual world, you actually see these things, the same things occurring in Krishna's pastimes, but they don't cause disturbance, they don't cause illusion, or problems that they occur in this material world. For example, in Krishna's pastimes, you have intoxication. The stories the Goswamis tell is that Krishna and the gopis sometimes would drink not rice wine, they would drink honey wine. And they would get so intoxicated that when they took the glass to fill it up with honey wine, they didn't see which side of the glass was the side you put the honey wine in. In other words, upside down, they poured the honey wine and it actually went all over the place. That's like a story when someone was bringing water to Prabhupada one time. And it was in one of these fancy wine glasses that looked like the bottom is the top and the top is the bottom. So they poured it on the bottom and went all over the desk. So in Krishna's pastimes, you actually have intoxication. And you have Krishna dancing with so many girls in the middle of the night. And you have Krishna gambling. Of course, Krishna gambles in Vrindavan with Srimati Radharani. They have this chess game. And they gamble things like, you know, kisses and embraces and things like that. I don't advocate you all to do those things. But still, everything that is here in this world is actually there in the spiritual world, because this material world is a reflection. Is a reflection of the spiritual world, as described by Krishna in the 15th chapter of the Gita. Like the banyan tree with its branches up, roots up, and branches down. So when we hear about Krishna's pastimes, Krishna doing these things in the spiritual world, we lose a desire to do these things in this world. That's actually the cure. Like Prabhupada said, the cure for lust, Prabhupada said Mr. Lust. Prabhupada gave lust a personality. Lust has a personality. That's Cupid, Kandarpa. He's known as Ananga. Ananga means he's invisible. He has no visible limbs because he was burnt by Lord Shiva. Like Cupid, like you have Valentine's Day here? No, you don't.
I think it's introducing
it. You introduce.
But it's not big.
It comes from America. We should introduce it. So, like Cupid is depicted in this Valentine's Day as having an arrow, you know, firing the arrows at the people and they fall in love and everything like that. So these arrows are the objects of the senses, form, taste, smell, etc., like that. So Cupid is actually there. And actually it's described by the scientists that when Cupid fires his arrows, or people fall in love, scientists don't talk about Cupid, the brain scan looks exactly the same as someone who's snorting cocaine. Did you know that? Interesting, isn't it? You can look it on the internet. You see the brain scans, you know, MRI or something. So this is very, very bewildering. So Prabhupada said, what is the cure for Mr. Lust? And devotees sometimes think there's some material cure, like you immerse yourself in ice cubes in the middle of the summer, a winter or something like that. Or you go in a sauna. It's like one time I was in Finland and we had a competition who could stay in the ice water longer. Of course, that wasn't to get rid of lust. It was just like as a passionate thing between the devotees. I lost. So there was even one devotee who wrote some book, you know, trying to... It was actually the name of the book, the devotee's no longer with us. The name of the book was The Joy of No Sex. And it was giving material ways to overcome sex desire, you know, lust. And really, that's not the way. Because even if you utilize the ways that he advocated, which included ice cubes, the sinful desire seed in the heart will remain. You have to fry that desire. So Prabhupada said, the way to overcome the mode of passion, lust, is to worship the deities. You know, something spiritual. Because when you see the smiling face of Krishna, Gandharva Giridhari, then, isn't it? Then the face of your object of lust will appear ugly in comparison. Did you know that? For example, there's one story of Sripad Jamunacharya. Jamunacharya was with his disciples and they were doing some sort of parikrama at one particular point. And there was another devotee there, it wasn't a devotee at that point, another man who was worshipping his girlfriend at the same time. His name was Donar Das. So the devotees, they were having like a Ratha Yatra, and this other person, Donar Das, He was having like a Rath Yatra for his girlfriend. He was fanning his girlfriend, holding an umbrella over her head. And the brahmacharya started to laugh at this Dhanur Das. And Ramanujacharya, he said, "Don't laugh, I want to talk to him." And so they brought him over to talk to Ramanujacharya. And Ramanujacharya said, some musical interlude. So Ramanujacharya said to this gentleman, "Why are you doing this with this girl?" And this gentleman, Dhanur Das, said, "Basically, she has beautiful eyes, and I can't keep my eyes off her," like that song goes. What is that? When Irish eyes are smiling. No. So I can't keep my eyes off of her. And Ramanujacharya said, "If I show you someone with more beautiful eyes, will you be happy?" So, of course, this Dhanur Das said, "Yeah, sure. Let me see someone with more beautiful eyes." So that night they went to see the deity, Varadaraja. That means the wish-fulfilling deity. He's in Kanchipuram. And as soon as Dhanur Das saw the deities, he fell in love with Krishna. And then he sort of lost attraction for the things of this world. Like it said, if you at all desire to enjoy society, friendship, and love, don't go to see the smiling boy. Krishna was playing his flute on the bank of the Keshi Ghat. So that's our solution to passion. I mean, we don't have to be so negative about passion, like some agitated, you know, brahmacharis or something like that. But we become absorbed in Krishna's form and Krishna's pastimes and service to the Vaishnavas. And then, naturally, Tajoshana Dashi Upavarga Vartmani Shraddha Ritir Bhakyanu Kurvashati Satam Prasangam Mamavirya Sambhado Bhavanti Ritkarna Rasayana Kata Tajoshana Dashi Upavarga Vartmani Shraddha Ritir Bhakyanu Kurvashati. Then you'll naturally proceed on the path of bhakti and you'll have that higher taste. So that's the solution. Of course, we do have so many no's, like the four regulated principles. But as one has a higher taste, one loses his interest in these. He becomes nirapeksha, not negative. I was making this point, I think in Finland, I was making this point that it's not that we should be negative towards the material world, because attraction and repulsion are opposite sides of the same coin. But we should have that positive attraction for Krishna, raso varjam, raso pirsa, param drishani vartate, and then we're no longer attracted to any of these things in this world, and actually we follow the four regulated principles automatically, not as do nots, but just automatically. And as far as this material world, we're just like neutral, disinterested. In other words, it's boring. Just like, for example, if someone asks me, "Would you like to see a cricket game?" It's not that I say, "Ugh, horrible cricket game." I say, "It's boring. Why should I waste my time?" So that's how the devotee sees the material world, as boring, disinterested. Not that he's simply thinking negatively about it and, you know, spitting at Maya. Like I said, sometimes in the early days of the movement, the brahmacharis, they would walk by some lady and just say, "Maya." And eventually they end up getting married to Maya. Or just like, I mean, we're all fanatic in the beginning days of the movement. Even when I went to see my mother in the beginning days of the movement, you know, I wouldn't even look at her face. I'd just look at her feet, you know, "Mommy." And I wouldn't listen to her. I'd always be chanting japa. And I always bring a brahmachari with me to protect me from my mother. You know, of course we should have some healthy fear. Basically, probably not of our mother. And it took me about, you know, 25 years to resolve my relationship with my mother. So, it's, in other words, it's a positive experience, Krishna consciousness, and that's how we should preach Krishna consciousness too. Not presenting it simply as a system of donuts or do-nots, as Srila Prabhupada said, but as do's. So, anyway, so any questions or comments about any of these points? Prabhupada, you have any questions?
Satisfied, man.
That's good. If the chairman's satisfied, then we've got it made. Yeah.
In the beginning, you know, that liquor made world is angry. And it's always like that. People have drink, they are angry. Well, what's the use of drinking if you get angry?
Prabhupada said something very funny. He said, a high-class person, when they get drunk, they go to sleep. Prabhupada did say that. Any low-class person, they just start speaking nonsense and get angry. And then Prabhupada said another thing about intoxication. He said it's an illusion within an illusion. I mean, we're already in an illusion, because Prabhupada at that point was talking about LSD and marijuana, which was the favorite intoxication. Nowadays, of course, it's legal in America in many places. You know, you can go and buy marijuana candy. It's true.
It's more healthy.
Yeah, it's healthy. At least you won't get cancer when you're intoxicated. So, your Prabhupada said, it's an illusion within an illusion. You're already in an illusion, thinking you're the body, and then you're going into a second illusion. Especially we've experienced that when people were taking marijuana, LSD, in the 1960s, many of them thought that they were God. And they were so enthusiastic about taking intoxication, they had invented this fancy form of LSD, which is called STP. I don't know if you've heard about that. They could stay, I wouldn't say high, but they could stay low for a whole week at a time with this stuff. And then they would keep it subcutaneous under their skin. So they keep having intoxication. Prabhupada said, it's the lowest of the low. You know, so we can get intoxicated on Krishna's holy name. I mean, we can do all these things. We get intoxicated in Krishna's holy name. All these things can fulfill our desires rather than having to take, liquor. Yes, you're right. People generally get angry. But if you're high class, you go to sleep. Prabhupada said that. Of course, we had Balaram also taking intoxication, too. You see, Krishna's pastimes, Balaram was calling the Jamuna. The Jamuna refused to come, and he started scratching the ground to bring the Jamuna there. Yes?
He also said about wine, that a glass of wine is good for digestion. And then one of his disciples, somebody asked him, so we can take some wine, that it's good for the digestion process. Now, the problem is that you won't stop with one glass.
Yeah. Well, there's even a funnier story about that. In the beginning days, Prabhupada said, you know, little liquor, little wine will help you digest with alcohol. So the devotees started carrying these hip flasks. You know what a hip flask is? You know, and you know, you give them an inch and they take a mile. You gave them an excuse.
They're actually doing that.
They were doing that, yeah. Yeah, they were carrying hip flasks. Just take a drop of alcohol with their You know, any time, you know, Prabhupada just gave a little leniency. For example, when Prabhupada first was in an airplane, he took 7-Up, he said, very nice. And later on in New York, he asked for a little more 7-Up. You know, 7-Up is like a soft drink. Prabhupada said, very nice, lemon, sugar, no problem. And so then a few days later, a whole truck, you know, a soft drink truck, pulled up in front of the New York Temple. And then Prabhupada stopped it. That's the saying, you give them an inch, they take a mile. So Prabhupada had to be very careful not to give us the least excuse for sense gratification. And even tea. All right, let's talk about tea. Devotees at one point, and nowadays, of course, everyone's taking herbal tea. But the devotees started taking these herbal teas, and Prabhupada came to them, and he saw the devotees drinking herbal tea. And Prabhupada asked, what's that for? And they said, well, we have a cough, we're sick. And the Prabhupada said, I will teach you how to make the proper tea. And then he made this thing we call Brahmastra. That was Prabhupada's tea, which was like hot peppers, you know, chili peppers, ginger root. And if you took it, you were free from your disease very quickly. Because, you know, you'd burn out the fever, burn out the cold or whatever. The steam would come from your ears after taking this Brahmastra. But you never found Prabhupada taking herbal teas. Prabhupada, one reason he was so against teas, even herbal teas, is because to him it represented the British. Because the British addicted the Indians to tea. I mean, when you go to India, you find the drivers of your car, they have to stop every once in a while for tea time. So the British exploited the Indians. And first, Prabhupada said they gave the tea to the Indians for free. He said, oh, here's free tea. And then once they addicted them to it, then they started charging. This is how, it's like a drug dealer, that's how they addict their customers. Okay, here's free heroin, you can try it out. And once they're addicted to it, then they can make their customer their slave, you know, prostitution and everything like that. So the British did the same thing with tea. And that's, my understanding, that's one reason probably was so negative about tea. I mean, of course, it's also intoxication. There's many types of intoxication we should avoid. I mean, devotees also have a discussion about chocolate. Everyone's heard about chocolate? No. Yeah, chocolate doesn't have much caffeine. It has this thing called theobromine, which is a central nervous system stimulant. And it's so heavy, if you give it to an animal, it'll kill a dog. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Chocolate is... And so devotees... That's the reason we don't take chocolate, because it's a stimulant. A few years ago, the devotees were taking this guarana. You know guarana? In Brazil, you know, they were taking these drinks and they were going on Sankirtan and saying, this is increasing our book distribution. But this is... So we have to be careful. Even if Prabhupada hasn't mentioned a specific type of intoxication, if it has that effect, we shouldn't be taking it. So that's intoxication. So any other questions? Or yes?
You were saying the real cure is to become attached to Krishna instead of form and service. But I was wondering, because I've been trying to practice Krishna consciousness for a long time, and as you know, in this area, we lost our guru, and then I was given reinitiation. And then, from one day, I noticed that this lust wasn't there anymore. So how big part of it is the mercy part? Because...
That's interesting. Well, mercy, my understanding of mercy is Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitete Guru Yakya. You know, instructions given by the spiritual master, and if we carry out those instructions, take those instructions as our life and soul. I have not personally experienced it, you know. And I took the dust from Prabhupada's feet many times. I mean, I was used to walk on the beach with Prabhupada. And Prabhupada's footprints, I take the sand, not the dust, the sand, throw it into my mouth. And I found, it was nice. I mean, obviously the foot dust of the pure devotee, the prasadam remnants of the pure devotee, and also the foot bathing more than pure devotee, very purifying. But I found, as far as my own spiritual advancement, is following Prabhupada's order and being dedicated to Prabhupada's mission, gave me the most... like realization and detachment from this material world. You know, lust is also subtle too. You know, it's not just like the gross attraction between men and women, or nowadays men and men, women and women, whatever it is. But it's the profit adoration distinction, you know, that we want to be appreciated. I mean, I'll give you an example. One year, I don't know if I should use a personal example, but I'll do it anyway. One year I was the GBC chairman, a long time ago. And after the year I was almost dead. So, and nobody appreciated me. There's no gold. Nowadays we appreciate people. In the old days we didn't appreciate people. Nobody said, thank you, you know, you gave up your life. And I was thinking, why did they appreciate me? So, but I understood that was Krishna's lesson for me, that... You know, the real appreciation has to be Krishna's appreciation from the heart. So as long as we want that sort of appreciation and to profit by some activity or being adored. I mean, one guru one time said, you know, I really need my guru puja daily, you know, my fix. I said, as long as we're desiring these things, then... that will entangle. That's the subtle sex life, you know, profit adoration distinction. You know, when I first became a guru, you know, first time I saw my picture on the altar, I thought, well, that's nice. So, I mean, I have to be honest, you know. But nowadays, you know, it's just like, I just want to please Prabhupada. You know, you make some spiritual advancement there for a few years in the Hare Krishna movement. So, the whole point is the real detachment is simply the desire, what is it? Anyabhi lashita chunyam jnana karma navritam anukuyena krishnana shilana bhakti uttama. Just the desire to give the pure Prabhupada pleasure and Krishna pleasure. Otherwise, everything else is a material desire. I mean, it's a fact, isn't it? Even if you're trying to enjoy devotional service, that's not pure at that particular point. Even if you want liberation. When I first joined the movement, I really wanted liberation. I was praying to Krishna every night to kill me. I would go to bed with my japa beads in my hand and say, Krishna, please, kill me tonight so I can go back to Godhead. Fortunately, he didn't reciprocate with that prayer, at least in the way that I wanted at that time. So these are all like, bhukti mukti siddhi kam, sakalaya santa. These are all desires that are separate from Krishna consciousness. So we know we're Krishna conscious when our desire is simply to please the senses, rishikena, rishikesha, sevanam, bhakti, ujjate, to please the senses of Krishna. So in other words, this desire masquerades or gets very subtle, so it masquerades even sometimes as devotional service. You know, as our bhakti, but it's not. We have to be able to distinguish bhakti between bhakti from bhukti, or sense gratification. But so my understanding of mercy is instructions of the guru, and of course, yes, taking initiation. I mean, when I took initiation from Prabhupada, I felt that I was free of material desires too. But later on, I discovered other things. And now I have to work on it, isn't it? That's the way things are in this world. So any other questions or comments? And I find worshiping the deities is extremely wonderful. I mean, I have my deities, my Shivas that I take with me every day, and I find it really connects me with Krishna, with my goal of life, and forces my mind to think of Krishna and Prabhupada's pleasure when I do that. Yeah, your question.
We're serving our deities here, but sometimes it becomes kind of some usual thing. You don't feel some extreme feelings, and sometimes when you are in separation and then you come to see the deity, you feel much more how, if we remain so close and open, how to maintain proper consciousness.
Well, the bhakti actually comes from association with devotees. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that bhakti is independent, and even Krishna doesn't give bhakti, but the devotees, Krishna say tamara Krishna dite par, Krishna belongs to the devotees, and the devotees. So what I find is by association, by sound vibration, like I listen to a class of Prabhupada every day, it really helps keep me in that enthusiastic mood, rather than thinking, you know, I've been there, seen it, done it, you know, the same deities, you know, we're still in the same place, they're still in the same temple. It gives me that sense of newness all the time when I connect with Prabhupada through sound vibration. So that's how I do it. You know, you hear Shushu Shraud, Shadananasha Vasudeva Katha Ruchisha Mahatsibaya Vipra Punya Tirthana Shevanat. So, I mean, especially His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. I mean, just there's something, even if you hear Prabhupada say the same thing, you know, over and over again, you know, you're not the body. I mean, today I was listening to some classes that he was giving in Hawaii. You know, very simple philosophy that, you know, obviously I know the philosophy, the basic philosophy by now. But it was so wonderful just to hear, because within the sound vibration of the pure devotees, Srila Prabhupada, the saffron dust particles, the lotus feet of the Lord are contained. Prabhupada himself says that. So even if you don't, even if he's speaking in a different language, even if you're listening to Prabhupada's chanting some Vaishnav song, you're getting this bhakti shakti implanted in your heart by connecting with sound vibration with Srila Prabhupada.
Books
too, yeah. You read the books. What I do is when I'm doing my deity worship every day, is I listen to a tape of Prabhupada or a reading of Prabhupada's books. Like that. And it really connects me. You know, every day we have to have this regular hearing. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya means daily, you know, on a regular daily function. Hearing Bhagavatam, hearing from Prabhupada is much time. If you're driving a car, I mean, right now we're very fortunate. We have all these audio books. They're, you know, MP3 audio books. readings of Srila Prabhupada's books, so we can take every available opportunity. If you're in an airplane, like I travel a lot in an airplane, driving a car, whatever, you know, walking down the street. I usually exercise every day, take an hour walk in the mountains, and I listen to Prabhupada. And it's, or reading, like that, yeah.
But in old days, when devotees didn't have all these devices, how they were maintaining the
Krishna? We had more classes in the old days. When I first joined the movement, we had 5 classes in Prabhupada's books every day.
But I mean, even before ISKCON and...
Before ISKCON?
Years ago.
Before ISKCON, they would hear. Regularly every night, they would gather. I remember... I don't remember the old days before ISKCON. Before ISKCON, I don't even want to talk about it. But the devotees would read every night or hear Krishna Katha in the villages every night and become enlivened. Prabhupada said that was the village. Because there was no electricity, I mean, all you could do is hear Krishna Katha at night. You couldn't go on the internet or do anything like that. So it was, you know, a nice sattvic lifestyle. So the more you hear, the more enthusiastic you get. The more you hear, the more the deities will be attractive to you. So we got Pancharatrika Vidhi, Bhagavad Vidhi. They go hand in hand, 2 tracks. You can't have one without the other. If you just do Pancharatrika Vidhi without Bhagavad Vidhi, you'll become ritualistic. You'll Niyamagraha, you'll be doing things without understanding the purpose of them. And if you just do Bhagavad Vidhi without Pancharatrika, you'll become wild. Yeah, without the regulation of Pancharatriki Vidhi. So I think both Prabhupada gave us both of these tracks. Prabhupada compared it to a train that has 2 tracks. So if we do both of these things on a regular basis, then we'll get this higher taste and we'll be fixed in Krishna consciousness. And we'll be enthusiastic. I mean, when I see the deities every day, it's like something new. Not only do they have a new outfit, but it's just so much nectar. Shuddha Bhakta Charna Renu. I mean, we're surrounded by so much ecstasy here. If we just open our hearts up by the hearing process, we could appreciate. So, I guess that's it. Any other questions? Time for prasadam? Yeah.
Just one comment. I mean, how people before they had all these devices.
Yeah.
As I understood, actually, they were singing a lot.
Yeah.
It's like... like farmers were behind the plow, they would actually be singing songs about Krishna.
Yeah.
Sipo said that Mother Yashoda, she had Krishna's pastimes versified, so she would be singing them.
Yes.
She was doing her daily chores. So actually, you know, just, you know, when you're doing the daily chores, singing songs about Krishna is actually a great way to...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even with Lord Chaitanya and his associates, like Narottama Das Thakur and others, they had Leela Kirtans. And they would chant these Leela Kirtans, you know, about Krishna's pastimes. And Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. So, they would be singing and chanting. I mean, that's Krishna consciousness. I mean, you don't need all these devices. I do, but you don't. But, you know, somehow or other, because our brains in Kali Yuga are so dense, we need these devices to remind us about different things. Yeah.
I don't have anything now, and I'm so dependent on devotees. But they are so self-sufficient with their small boxes. It seems
maybe you should get a small box too.
They would advise me, but I want live association.
So come to the class and get live association. Go to Sridhar Mayapur, get live association. Yeah, there is live association, but you know sometimes. Especially in my life as I travel, you know, there's not a lot of devotees around sometimes, so I just take advantage. I can hear Prabhupada at any time. Prabhupada was not adverse to technology. But when technology was used just for technology's sake, Prabhupada didn't appreciate that. Like I mentioned yesterday about the telex machine. You know, so devotees can telex each other, all glories to Prabhupada, where are you, I'm here. Or like, you know, people text each other all the time now. They get this disease of text thumb. You know, isn't it? And they have to get operated on because their thumb is no longer working. And what are they texting? So much nonsense. You know, what do they need to text for? I mean, I text things, but it's Krishna conscious. So we can use technology. I mean, what's wrong with technology? Krishna has arranged this technology for us. So I'm not preaching to you, you should get an MP3 player. But
no, I just came for a short while. All my things are there, but I also didn't have that much.
Yeah. Okay. I think it's time for prasadam, right? Time to enjoy ourselves. All glories to divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.